You are Locked On MLB Prospects, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And here's your host, Aram Layton.
This is Locked On MLB Prospects, your go-to podcast on the future stars of Major League Baseball. As always, I'm your host, Aram Layton. I'm a prospects writer and analyst, as well as the founder of JustBaseball.com. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about Shane Baz Day. Shane Baz gets the call-up over the weekend. He is set to make his debut later today, Monday night. I'm really excited to see this pitching matchup as Robbie Ray, on the other end of things, who has just been phenomenal Cy Young finalist this year, continues to just churn out great start after great start. And now Shane Baz is going to have to try to match him today for the Rays. I cannot emphasize enough how excited I am for Shane Baz to make his debut. As you know, I've said it a few times over the last few weeks, maybe even months, that I have felt that Shane Baz has been big league ready for a little bit now. And Baz is a guy that's always had a ton of upside. There's no disputing that. I mean, he was a first round pick out of high school and showed some great swing and miss stuff. Also showed some command issues, which prompted the Pirates to be comfortable with adding him into that infamous Chris Archer trade. But now, of course, the Rays, as they do, they unlock what you have. If you're a pitcher, they just help unlock what you've got. And Shane Baz had a lot, and they helped him unlock it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and I'm also going to discuss what I think he can do for this Rays team down the stretch here. I don't think that it's a coincidence that they're calling him up a few weeks before the postseason. They want to see what they have here. Maybe he could be somebody that slides into the bullpen. We saw Shane McClanahan go into the bullpen for the Rays last year. Maybe he slides into the bullpen here, Shane Baz does, in the postseason stretch, or he could be somebody that makes starts. I think we can see him in the playoffs as more of a long relief and bullpen type of arm, depending on how they want to roll with the rotation, because the Rays are different. We know that. They beat to their own drum. No Tyler Glass now is unfortunate, so it's going to be fascinating to see how they decide to roll with the rotation in a 7-game set. Frankly, I'd argue that the Rays are probably better off rolling with Shane Baz, potentially, just depending on how he looks here. He's only going to have time to make probably two more starts before the postseason, which is why I was a little bit surprised that they didn't call him up sooner. Because the Rays are just a force. We know how good they have been and how good they continue to be. They almost never lose. I have friends that are Red Sox and Yankees fans, and they want to gain ground on the Rays. And even when the Red Sox and Yankees are hot, and I know they've been up and down a lot of the year, when they're hot, it's like you're never gaining ground on the Rays because they don't lose. The problem is with the Rays in a playoff setting is I'm a little bit worried about the rotation. If there's a team that defies that, it's the Rays, because they have guys like Andrew Kittredge, now Nick Anderson back, even guys like JT Chagois, I think I said that right, Chagois, it sounds so fancy. Well, his curveball has also been really fancy, and he's been getting a ton of swings and misses. So they have a very, very interesting stable. They've also got guys like Drew Rasmussen, who I think everybody knew they were going to unlock more out of Drew Rasmussen. He can be stretched out multiple innings and really has been a starter for them now too. I expect Rasmussen to be more of that 5-inning starter for them in the postseason. Colin McHugh has been good as well. So I could see Shane Baz in more of that Drew Rasmussen type of role. He goes 5 innings in a start if he's really feeling it. If not, you're kind of just expecting 3 to 5 innings from him, and then you go to that bullpen. Chris Archer has even looked good in spurts as well when he's healthy. So they want to see what they have here in Baz, and I'm expecting him to be more of a 3 to 5 inning guy in the postseason if he looks good in these multiple starts here. But in the regular season, I'm expecting them to stretch Shane Baz out, and that's going to be fun to see what they do with Baz here. It seems like they've been trying to manage his innings pretty well. He's made 17 starts. He's only thrown 78 and two-thirds innings between AA and AAA. I'm going to get into the numbers and what really stands out for me between those two levels and what has been really impressive out of Shane Baz. But it seems like they have managed those innings for the sole reason of having him ready to go to potentially throw 25-plus innings from the end of the season here into the postseason for the Rays if he's feeling it and if he looks good. And I'm expecting that all to happen based on what I've seen from him and based on the numbers as well. To talk about some of the things that really stand out to me with Baz, and we have him ranked, like I said, eighth in our top 100 at justbaseball.com. And the big change for Baz is really just the command improvement. As I mentioned earlier, that was the big thing that Shane Baz needed to hone in on. He had the raw stuff, 70 grade fastball, at least by our measure, 60 to 65 grade slider. I think it's got a chance to be a 70 grade slider, especially if he's coming in relief. Then forget it. When he's throwing max effort fastball sliders and really just dialing it up, it's going to be scary. He'll be hitting triple digits. That slider will be in the low 90s in a wipeout pitch. But what has really just stood out to me is that he's showing a good feel for the changeup. The changeup looks really good, and he's not showing much effort in that delivery. That was the big change. I think the Rays looked at Shane Baz and they said, hey, this is a guy that does not need much effort to throw hard, to throw in the upper 90s. So let's simplify it. Let's quiet things down, and let's just allow him to repeat those mechanics super easily. If you look at Shane Baz's mechanics now, it looks like he's yawning as he throws. He looks like he's bored as he throws. That's how easy it is for him to dial into that velocity. He doesn't need much to make it happen. And that's a big, big thing to be able to realize as a pitcher. And I'm sure the Rays have helped him with that. Now he releases the ball from the same point more frequently. His mechanics are all in sync more frequently. And he's also able to repeat that release point among his different pitches well. That's why the changeup's played up more. That's why the fastball is worked off of the changeup well and vice versa. And the slider as well. When we look at the walk rates year by year, he walked four batters per nine innings in 2019 in A-ball. Albeit that was as a 20-year-old, and that was his first stint outside of rookie ball. But even in rookie ball, his first season in that level, 23 innings, again, that was just his first season, but he walked 5.3 batters per nine innings. Then the next year, he goes to rookie ball again because the walk rate was so concerning. He improves marginally to 4.57 walks per nine, a marginal improvement in 2019, but it didn't matter because the Rays still knew that there needed to be a dramatic improvement. And that was his first year in 2019 where he goes to A ball as a 20-year-old. That was his first year with the Rays. He had never pitched above rookie ball with the Pirates. And that first full season was the start of the Rays starting to figure out what they needed to do with Shane Baz. Then in 21, of course, they had all of 2020 to work with things at the alternate training site to make those improvements, and we have really seen those improvements. In Double A, and this was in a pretty large sample size, this was in seven starts, Shane Baz only walked 0.55 batters per nine innings. Think about that. He went from walking more than five or more than four batters per nine innings, depending what year you look at, to walking only a half of a batter roughly per nine innings, or one batter per 18 innings. That's just absurd. Yes, two walks in 32 and two-thirds innings. He goes up to AAA and the walk rate rises a little bit, only natural. The AAA strike zone. Anything that I talk to about with players, when I ask them about the adjustment to AAA, whether it's a hitter or a pitcher, they say the zone gets much closer to what the zone looks like in the big leagues. It shrinks quite a bit. The walk rate was still only at two walks per nine. That's average or above average in today's game. So he has really just looked like a different pitcher. When we look at some of the other figures, I mean, the ERA in Double A, 2.48. The FIP was at 1.96. In Triple A, the FIP a bit higher because he got burned by the long ball in Durham, which is a place where the ball just flies. And the ERA was actually better, 1.76 ERA, but the FIP at 3.32, XFIP at 2.99. I think he's somewhere between that ERA and FIP and AAA because there's been some bad luck there, 17.1% home run to fly ball rate. He's been more in the 13 to 12% range. That doesn't sound like a big difference, but when we're talking about percentage of fly balls leaving the yard, 2 to 3% can make a huge, huge difference. Obviously, FIP is widely affected and dramatically affected by home runs, even if it's some bad luck involved in there with the home runs. But what has really stood out still is that in AAA, he is striking out 12.52 batters per nine, which is just outrageous, and he's not walking a lot of guys. So the strikeout to walk ratio is great. He is still putting up quality start after quality start, and there's a reason why the Rays felt comfortable enough to call this guy up. The thing that looks really promising too is that even if the command is not exactly where it's been in AA and AAA, which happens with pitchers in the majors, even guys with track records of great command longer than Shane Baz's, which is really just this year alone where he's had that epiphany, it's still going to be enough. He's still going to have enough to be a reliever for them right now with that fastball slider combination. Seeing Baz in person really helped me realize the life that his fastball has and just the sharpness and late break that his slider has. There's a reason why Shane Baz has the highest swinging strike percentage among all pitchers in the upper levels of the minor leagues. Number one and two here, they're essentially tied. Shane Baz, 17.5% swinging strike rate. This is among pitchers with 70 or more innings pitched. Grayson Rodriguez, our number one, my number one pitching prospect in baseball by a very slim margin, is at 17.4% swinging strike rate. So both of these guys at the top there in that regard, and that's always a good indicator of a good translation to success at the major league level. Obviously, I don't have access to cold strike whiffs right now, and that's not something I can really see with Shane Baz, but usually those two correlate really well, and that means that no one's squaring him up well. He's either getting a lot of weak contact, a lot of foul balls, and a lot of swings and misses, and all of those things are obviously good for a pitcher. Baz, as we look at his entire arsenal, and you can get our write-up on him at justbaseball.com, but fastball, we have a 70 on it. Slider, I have 60 to 70. I see 60 right now, but it shows flashes of plus plus. The changeup has already looked above average with a chance to be plus, but I'm looking at that as more as an above average third offering, but it plays up thanks to what he has with his fastball. The command is now above average given what he has done this year, but obviously we want to see a little bit more of a sample size of consistent command, and then the curveball is a fourth pitch, but he's able to steal some strikes with that and get me over curveball every once in a while early in counts or in hitters counts is always something that is nice to have in your back pocket. With Baz, I'm expecting him to be one of the few pitchers that rolls out and looks good right away. I think there's going to be some spots here and there where maybe he is going to be tested to trust his stuff, but the swing and miss stuff is just too good. The command I'm sold on. It's not just somebody that has had a random spurt of good command. It has been a dramatic change, but after no season in 2020 where he could really work on things and coming out with a very tangible difference in his mechanics and a very simplistic look to his mechanics, I think that this is for real. And I think the roughly two walks per nine innings is what we can expect from Shane Baz moving forward. It is just ridiculous that the Rays have this guy just in their back pocket as well. And that was what I was talking about around the deadline. I said, hey, I think the Rays need to make some moves. They should make some moves. They went and got Nelly Cruz, and that's been fantastic. They went and made some other small moves for their bullpen before the deadline, obviously getting Rasmussen and then Fire Eisen, and those guys have been great additions. Obviously, Willy Adames has been fantastic for the Brewers as well, so time will tell on that. But Adames just wasn't hitting with the Rays, and it just seemed like one of those mutually beneficial trades for both sides. And I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Rasmussen, who has always shown flashes, but needed a little bit of help honing in on his command and maximizing his stuff. And of course, Tampa is the place to help you do that. I'm surprised it took this long to get Shane Baz called up. I think that it was more so the Rays wanting to manage his innings, and it's easier to manage his innings in AAA where winning doesn't matter, instead of using a roster spot on a guy that you're not going to throw as frequently as anybody else in your bullpen to manage those innings so that he doesn't have to be shut down the stretch. Because of course, you're dealing with someone like Shane Baz, who is so valuable, is so electric, that you don't want to just go from zero in 2020. I know he was throwing at the ATS and all that stuff, but zero in-game high-stress pitches to just instantly a ton of high-stress pitches. So that's why we see him in the 70-inning range. I expect him to rack up another 25, maybe 30, depending on how deep the Rays go into the postseason. Probably 20 to 25 is the right mark there. And it's going to be a nice little audition here for the Rays' top pitching prospect and top prospect, period, and one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. Very excited for that outing. And of course, I'm going to have a breakdown on that one later in the week after we get a chance to see him throw. Like I said, must see TV tonight with Robbie Ray and Shane Baz, and obviously a very difficult matchup against a fantastic Blue Jays lineup that has a lot of urgency right now, trying to make the playoffs. Three-team race in the AL East between the rivals. You got the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Blue Jays. It's going to be really fun to see how that all shakes out. To tie a bow on Shane Baz, I really think that he could be as good of an acquisition as any other pitcher they got at the deadline, they being the Rays, of course. You go get Max Scherzer, nothing's going to top that. That's a Hall of Famer. But of the attainable guys that we were looking at potentially the Rays to go get, I think Shane Baz has a chance to instantly be better than all of them, or at least be right there. And obviously you're not giving up anything to call up Shane Baz. You're just calling the guy up. You're just giving up an active roster spot, and that's about it. So should be a lot of fun tonight. I'm going to talk about the AL Rookie of the Year race, which is just a very interesting one. Randy Rosarena is probably going to take it home. I'm going to discuss some of my gripes with that and make the case for some of the other players, and also just have to mention Wander Franco, which it sucks, absolutely sucks that he went down, but I just wanted to provide some context with some stats about how good he was before going down for that stretch of 62 games, and I really think he actually could have made a case for Rookie of the Year if he was able to play at least down these final 3 weeks. I know 2 weeks left in the season now, but he's been out for a week, so could have had another 20 to 25 games on his resume. Would have been close, still would have been below 100 games, but I would have leaned Franco if he continued to do what he was doing, and I'll explain some of that in a moment as well. Before I get there, a reminder that this episode is brought to you in part by Wealthfront. Decades of data show that investors who trade individual stocks underperform the market every single year. In fact, only 1% of day traders beat the market. The odds are not in your favor if you're doing it alone. Team up with Wealthfront instead. Investing can be complicated, but whether you're a beginner or you've been investing for years, Wealthfront makes it easy. They have the right tools for every portfolio. Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. No manual trades, no picking stocks, no watching the stock market every single day. They automatically handle all the investing based on preferences you control. Wealthfront can help you lower your taxes you pay as you invest as well. For the average client, their tax loss harvesting can more than cover the low 0.25% annual advisory fee. And also, Wealthfront is trusted with $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. That's wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB to get $5,000 managed for free. All you need is $500 to get started and grow your wealth the easy way. Let Wealthfront do the work for you. That's wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB today. Also brought to you in part by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market, and they're good for you. They have 9 delicious flavors, and whether you are a fan of coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, there is one for everybody. Plus, they've got the limited time cookie dough chunk flavor, which also sounds really good. Haven't tried that one yet, but I'm a big cookie dough guy. The health facts on these bars are very impressive. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, only 4 grams of net carbs. It's tough to beat that. They're covered in chocolate, easy to chew, and great for a keto diet. If you go to builtbar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your first order. That's builtbar.com and the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your first order. Lastly, brought to you by our friends at Freshly. Dinner time can be chaotic, but with Freshly, it's easy. Their chefs take care of your meals a few nights a week and take the pressure off of you. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep them in the fridge stocked or skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you have to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals. You can pick from what you want for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. And now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every single night and just start living life freshly. Right now, if you go to freshly.com/lockedon, you'll get $40 off your first two orders. Yes, that's $40 off your first two orders if you go to freshly.com/lockedon for our listeners. That's freshly.com/lockedon for $40 off your orders. So let's get to this AL Rookie of the Year race. And by the Vegas odds, the general Vegas odds, Randy Arozarena is a minus 160 favorite, which means you got to lay down $160 to win $100. Coming in at second on the odds here is Adolis Garcia of the Rangers, plus 325, meaning you put $100 down, you win $325. Then Wander Franco, which is pretty crazy that he's already played his way up into the third spot and hasn't played in a week or so now, plus 775, which is obviously $100, you win $775. So it seems like it's really just a two-horse race here between Arozarena and Adolis Garcia, though I would argue that Ryan Mountcastle deserves some more respect too, and I'd even say Luis Garcia of the Astros has been good on the bump, but Mountcastle now has 30 home runs, albeit he doesn't walk a lot, he doesn't play great defense, and that's going to hurt him. Of course it is. But Randy Arozarena doesn't walk a lot and doesn't play good defense at all either. I know that Mountcastle is more playing first base and has been pretty bad in left or in right, wherever they stick him. Arozarena has just been bad in the outfield, and that's something that he hasn't fully shaken. I think he's been a bit better this year, but still been pretty darn bad. He strikes out a decent amount. I think Arozarena is a fine player. And I said coming into this year that Arozarena was going to hit 270 with about 20 homers, and everybody was going to just kind of be like, oh, gee, what happened to him? But this is more so the player that he is and what you can probably come to expect of him. Honestly, I think he's overachieving a little bit in this second half. You look at the numbers from the first half to the second half, he's been a lot better in the second phase of the season. He's also been a little bit lucky. And I hate the word luck when we talk about hitters. And I'd say that he's just had more things go his way. His batting average on balls in play is over 400 in the second half of the season. He has the largest discrepancy between his weighted on base percentage and his expected weighted on base percentage, meaning that what is really expected based on what he's doing at the plate is not happening. It's been a lot better than that so far. Of course, there's outliers to anything, but after a bad first half, after the K rate has not really changed much in the second half, yet the numbers have been better. I think he's hitting the ball harder, and that definitely helps with batting average on balls in play and some of those other components. And I think he's been able to salvage his year, and he's been no doubt a lot better in the second half. But there's a few gripes I have with just the fact that Randy Arozarena could potentially be and probably will be the rookie of the year this year. I'll get into the rookie eligibility thing and all of that in a second, because Adolis Garcia's situation isn't that much better. It's a little bit better, but Adolis Garcia debuted in 2018 for the Cardinals. You have Arozarena, who debuted in 2019 with the Cardinals as well, and then 2020 with the Rays, and then of course this year also. So both with weird situations. I know 2020 was a weird year in general for rookie eligibility and threw a wrench into a lot of things when we look at the rookie of the year race and just the way that it's normally handled. Obviously, 2020 was unprecedented, and there, as a result, you have a lot of weird things happening. That aside, if we're comparing Arozarena to Adolis Garcia, there's a few things that I'm looking at here. Of course, the WAR in that department, you have Adolis Garcia, especially in F WAR. Adolis Garcia is ahead of Arozarena in that regard by a pretty decent margin, and it's not surprising to me. Adolis Garcia plays great defense in center field. Very, very good defense in a very important position. Arozarena plays bad defense in a corner outfield spot. That should matter. I know that Adolis Garcia does not walk at all. I mean, his on-base percentage is sub 300. 244, 290, 467 slash line is not fantastic. It's not great. He has a 105 WRC plus, so still slightly above average offensively. I'm surprised that he's been able to honestly sustain the numbers that he's been able to sustain, but he has. And he's got 30 home runs, and he's driven in 72, and this is on a really bad team. That's got to matter, too. A rookie who's probably been the best player on his team for a good portion of the year and been the most productive productive hitter on his team on a bad one. And you have a Rosarena who's in the middle of one of the best teams in baseball and does not really have to worry about getting pitched around or hitting in the heart of the order day in and day out and having a team rely on him for production more so than other players. I think that matters. I think it does. And you look at WAR, you got Adolis Garcia at 2.9 for F-WAR. You got a Rosarena at 2.4 for F-WAR. So obviously, on the offensive side, that's the only reason why it's even close, is that Adolis Garcia walks at a 5% clip. They both strike out right around 30%, and Garcia is well above average defensively in center field, whereas you have some subpar defense from a Rosarena. If we look at Baseball Reference WAR, it's a bit tighter. You have Randy Rosarena at 3.4, and you have actually a 0.1 difference. Below him is Adolis Garcia. So Baseball Reference actually prefers a Rosarena, but Fangraphs weights defense a little bit differently, and obviously leans Garcia in terms of value. The funny thing about this is both of these guys are pretty much in their late 20s and will be the finalists most likely for Rookie of the Year. And if Wander Franco was still playing, if he was healthy and was finishing out the year, you would have about an 8-year difference between the finalists here. Adolis Garcia, 28 years old. Franco is 20. That's just absurd. But that being said, if it was fully Garcia's first season, I don't care if he's 33. He's still a rookie. Ichiro, when he came over, still technically a rookie. It's different. It is different. But what bothers me a little bit about this whole situation, more so with a Rosarena, honestly, even though a Rosarena's debut was in 2019, whereas Adolis Garcia's big league debut was in 2018, a Rosarena played 19 games in 2019, then played 23 regular season games in 2020, and then had one of the best, if not the best, postseasons of all time, which was 25 games there. I find it interesting that the postseason doesn't count against rookie eligibility. I'm sure that you can make a case against it counting for rookie eligibility, and there's probably a good case for it. I just think when you're playing 25 games, and what's the reason for rookie eligibility? I think it's to make the playing field fair when we're considering the award, and then obviously there's other factors as well. But from just purely an award standpoint, I think that those 25 games should matter. This guy was the ALCS MVP. These are important at-bats. These are at-bats that you get a lot of experience, a lot of polish. Those 25 games, in my eyes, in the postseason, going all the way through to the World Series, are worth 120 regular season games in terms of experience and how polished you get from that and how much more comfortable you're going to be going into the next year. You were just playing in the World Series. Of course, you're going to be much more comfortable on opening day in 2021 after 2020. I know it was different with limited fans in the World Series and no fans through most of the playoffs, but I would like to think that those 25 games helped Randy Rosarena with this season and helped him endure the struggles of the season and helped him feel more comfortable going into this year. He did have a bit of a hangover going into the season, but has rectified that and has been a lot better in the second half. I just think that those 25 games, period, you're playing games at the major league level, that should matter, whether it's playoffs or regular season. I think it should count. And that's just my take on that. You add those 25 games in from last year's postseason, and now all of a sudden, Randy Rosarena, coming into this year, had played almost 70 games. And that just seems like enough of a sample size to say, okay, this guy should probably graduate, especially when he first sniffed the big leagues in 2019. In Adolis Garcia's case, I just think there's got to be like a statute of limitations. You debut in 2018. That was 3 years ago. He struggled mightily with the Cardinals, but he appeared in 21 games. And then in 2020, only appeared in 3 games, but was with the big league club for a couple weeks. And there's value to that as well. I remember people making a big fuss about Ben Simmons in the NBA for being the Rookie of the Year after missing his entire rookie season, didn't play a single game, but was able to practice with the team and be around the NBA team. And people did not like that. People said Ben Simmons was the fraudulent Rookie of the Year. And honestly, I disagreed with that one to a degree because he didn't play any games. I definitely think it helped being around the NBA guys and being around the NBA team, but he wasn't playing in games. where you have somebody like Adolis Garcia who played in 21 games in 2018 and then played in just a few games in 2020. I think Garcia is a little bit of a better situation. Obviously didn't play through 25 games in the postseason as well, but it's just a bizarre situation. I think 2020 didn't help with that, given that we had a 60-game season that made it weird with graduation terms and all of that stuff when it comes to rookie eligibility. It just something sits weird with me when I'm comparing a 20-year-old to a 28-year-old who debuted in 2018. It just seems a bit off. And it ties into the prospect stuff as well. I think the graduation components and the thresholds for graduation as a prospect are a little bit weird also. And when you look at just baseball's top 100 list, a lot of people were like, oh, well, where's Sixto Sanchez? Where's Joey Bart? Our threshold was 150 plate appearances to graduate and also 50 innings pitched. Sixto and I believe Joey Bart both didn't hit those thresholds. However, when you look at when they debuted, it was over a year ago. And that was something that I wanted to look at. And I think it matters more with prospects as well. If you debuted in the big leagues a year prior, at that point, you graduate in my eyes because you have access to big league training, big league coaching, and you just have a lot more at your disposal. Sixto Sanchez, when Sixto Sanchez comes back healthy, he's not going to have to climb his way back up. He's going straight to the big leagues. Maybe he'll make a rehab assignment or two. If he's healthy for opening day, then he's definitely not making a rehab assignment, and he's going to be looked at as a big leaguer. We know what Sixto Sanchez is capable of. Nothing has changed in the prospect rankings with him being hurt since he made those seven starts in the big leagues. I just think ranking those guys, it gets a little bit stale. I mean, how much longer do we need to look at Nate Pearson in the top 100 list after he debuted in the big leagues a year ago? How much longer do we need to look at these guys in the top 100 list? Frankly, looking at Randy Arozarena in the top prospect lists after last year was bizarre. Fangraphs had him at number 4. How do you rank a guy that just put up the best postseason of all time, arguably, statistically probably the best postseason of all time, and now you're going to rank him against 17-year-old prospects who have not played above high A ball? How is that possible? How are you ranking a prospect that just almost single-handedly won his team the World Series at the major league level? That's not a prospect anymore. It just isn't. And I didn't want it to be a subjective case-by-case thing, so I tried to look at the things that all contribute to those types of feelings on players. And I think a year after you debut, I think a more fair threshold, and I also think that the playoff game should matter for prospect graduation especially. It's, you could say one thing for rookie of the year, but playoff games should definitely matter for prospect graduation. You shouldn't play 25 games in the playoffs and then be considered a prospect still. It's just dumb. Why are we ranking that guy as a prospect when we know he's starting on the big league club on opening day and he was already there for a while and there's nothing to project? He's there. Let's see how he does. And let's start talking about him as a young big leaguer and start talking about him in that at least through that lens as well. It's a little bit of a rant, but it's something that has been brought up to me a few times, and I thought it was an interesting topic. But to wrap the bow up on my AL Rookie of the Year situation, I'm going to lean to the guy that impacts the game in more ways, and to me, that's Adolis Garcia. He is playing, like I said, fantastic defense out there in center. The 30 home runs are a great plus. I think he's in a terrible situation given that in Texas, he is one of two players with an OPS over 750. So he's the one guy that if you're really going to avoid grooving one to, or if you're in a situation where you can just kind of pitch around him, I would. I don't think people are really pitching around Adolis Garcia, but if there's one guy you're not really going to just groove one to in that lineup, it's him. And that matters, especially as a rookie in such a weak lineup. I know that you can't hold that situation against Randy Arozarena. It's like, it's not Arozarena's problem that Adolis Garcia is in a bad spot. But I think when we look at WAR and impact on his team and defense, and the offense is somewhat comparable. I think Arozarena is walking a bit more and hitting a bit more consistently, but the power output's comparable, the production is comparable, and then the defense is just not even close. Base running roughly the same as well. I'm going to go Adolis Garcia, 28-year-old rookie of the year, overtakes the 27-year-old rookie of the year. I would have heavily leaned Wander Franco if he had at least another 25 games under his belt, because the crazy thing about Wander is in 62 games, he posted a WAR of 2.2. So And that's F4, of course. So Adolis Garcia, 2.9 F4 in 136 games. Arozarena, 2.4 F4 in 130 games. And in less than half of the games, he almost matched them. I think if we have Franco playing another 30 games, it would be really hard to not give it to him, especially with the ridiculous on-base streak that he had, the minuscule strikeout rate. He's playing way better defense than I think anybody thought at shortstop. He has been special this year, and I really hope that he'll be back soon enough to be able to help the Rays out in the postseason. I could see him being the big postseason hero this year as well. The difference will be that I don't think he'll be eligible to be a rookie next year, which is probably the right thing anyway. It's a shame that he won't win Rookie of the Year ever, but I think he's got a lot more awards coming for him in the future, so it shouldn't be too big of a deal for Wander Franco. That'll do it for today's episode. Looking forward to recapping Shane Baz's debut and a lot more on the way as well. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to talking prospects with you tomorrow.